on clearing the clutter inside and out, we're talking about creating a successful relationship. What personal development have you done to be a good partner? Have you thought about the baggage you may be bringing into a relationship? Why is honoring your emotions an important part of a healthy relationship? Learn tips to have a successful relationship as we continue our month focusing on fall.
Ready to clear your clutter and share your gifts with the world? Every Tuesday at 1 p.m., join award-winning professional organizer, author, and certified life coach Julie Caraccio on Clearing the Clutter Inside and Out, as she teaches you how to navigate the waters to declutter your life. Julie Caraccio destroys the box and examines clutter in all areas.
Today's episode was inspired because our guest today wrote a book that both my husband and I read. And in the book, Vince shares stories of his dating life. I had some pretty bad experiences, but some of the things that he shared really shocked me. The worst thing I had was a man who told me he happened to be an ex-priest. So I tell you, if you decide not to be a priest and start dating again, you may want to rethink your strategy and not be so picky. I was at my fighting weight and looked really good and would be thrilled to be back at that weight now. And he had the audacity to say to me, "You're just at the edge of what I find attractive." I think that's probably in a relationship the worst thing anyone has ever said to me, and probably one of the worst things you can say to a woman about weight and appearance in any way. Needless to say, we weren't dating after that. I think there's a lot of garbage out there too, like these magazines, you know, 10 ways to win a man, 10 ways to win a woman. And what I appreciated about his book was that it takes a really funny, poignant look at dating. And as he says, he's a short, middle-aged guy with no game. And so I think that it's going to speak to a lot of people, and I recommend women read it as well, because I see that a lot of people have these expectations that are just nuts. I tell this story a lot. I had a list of qualities I wanted in a husband, and there are things like integrity, kindness, intelligence, all the things my husband has. My one quote-unquote material kind of thing that really wasn't necessary was height. I wanted a guy like 6 feet to 6 feet three. Well, guess what? I got a husband that's shorter than me, and I wouldn't trade him for anything. He's the best thing that has ever happened to me. And I had to have that realization, the aha moment, that, you know what? What's really important here? And I think as someone, I've only been married 5 years, but I was in the dating scene a lot and got to observe a lot. I'm kind of a quiet person. And that's what I appreciate about Vince's book, because there's based on his observations and talking to women. And I feel like men too, this isn't just a slant against women, that both men and women will overlook someone because they have this list of expectations, or she's his height, you know, or she's taller, and it goes both ways on that. So you might be throwing away a good relationship because of being picky, to be honest. I also think in our conversation here, there's lots of good advice if you're married. This podcast episode isn't just if you're looking to find someone. We had a conversation about what makes a successful relationship. And so if you're married or in a long-term relationship, listen, because there's some good advice coming your way. And finally, full disclosure, Vince is a friend. He was a groomsman in my wedding. He is a friend, but it was a really good book. And I love talking about relationship clutter and the things that we're doing to goof up our relationship. So I'm excited about our conversation today about how to have a successful relationship. Vince Gaglione is a guy who asks lots of questions, not only of himself, but also of his society and the world around him. Although he claims he's found no real answers, that hasn't stopped him in his quest to gain perspective on a little something we call life. Vince is the author of 13 books on personal transformation, self-help, fiction, and poetry. When he's not at his real job, you can find him sucking down venti-sized coffees at a brisk pace at his local Starbucks, thinking up new writing projects, or pondering his mystery questions of life. Originally from Philadelphia, Vince now resides in Raleigh. Welcome, Vince.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show today, Julie.
All right, let's get started. Why do people need to work on themselves to achieve a successful relationship?
Well, because if they don't know exactly what it is that their issues are, for example, then they're going to potentially keep carrying those forward into future relationships. So it's really important to understand yourself well. It's also important to understand what you're looking for, what really, you know the inner you, essentially. To do that, the only way to have a successful relationship is to know yourself well. And then you, for the most part, you know what you need, what you desire, what you're looking for, as opposed to not knowing and then just kind of, you know, throwing darts against the wall, which is what a lot of people seem to be doing today.
I would also say, as I approach my fifth year anniversary, that it's important to continue that process, not just stop it when you find someone or get married or you're in a long-term relationship. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's true, because we all change over time. We're still essentially the same people, the same core, but we do change in small, subtle ways. Sometimes they could be large changes, but it's important to take a look, stop, pause, and reflect, get an idea of, you know, where you are and kind of, you know, check in with yourself. And when you do that, you have a better idea. You know exactly what you're doing, you know, where your mind is, where your heart is going forward. So it's very important to do that, because yeah, if we just stop and we never look back and we never reflect, then things can go awry pretty quick. All of a sudden someone has changed and then the other person hasn't, and then you diverge in your paths.
I wonder why you think most people don't take the time to reflect and figure out what their baggage is. I would say, based on my personal experience, and as I mentioned in the intro, I met Vince at a meetup, and so he was there before I met my husband, you know, when I'd complain about the dating world and stuff. But my experience was that most people don't take the time to do self-reflection. So why do you think people are avoiding or not willing to take the time to examine their own baggage?
Well, it's a very hard thing to do, especially if you kind of, you know, understand or know that you might have some shortcoming. It's a lot easier to just kind of push those aside and keep going as you are without really stopping and facing, kind of looking at yourself in the mirror. Also, people are very busy these days as well, so they don't necessarily slow down. We live in a fast-paced society, and it's really easy to jump from point A to point B without ever taking time to sit back and reflect and take a personal inventory.
They can stop social media. I mean, people waste a ton of time on Facebook. I know I'm on all of the social media for business, but I've taken a step back. One, because people have gotten crazy on social media, but it just is such a time sucker. So that's when someone will say to me, oh, I don't have time to declutter. I'm like, yeah, you do. How much are you spending on social media or playing video games or whatever? So what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's true. I found myself doing that at times as well. Sometimes you can just sit there and scroll and review status updates and just watch a feed. And the next thing you know, 15 minutes have gone by and you wonder, you know, where'd that last 15 minutes go? So people get trapped in the minutiae of the day-to-day that they don't spend the time to reflect back, or at least take that time to just, you know, quiet themselves. And then that's where you find you make progress. But if you're just bouncing from A to B every day and it's nonstop, then you're never really turning yourself off and you're never really listening to your inner voice. It's really easy to just do that. Once you get started down that path, it gets very difficult to kind of break out of that. So it's like you have to forcefully stop yourself. Otherwise, it just becomes a part of, you know, what you do. This is your day every day.
I also think in general, people would benefit from unplugging. Tony and I were out to dinner the other night, and we were watching and trying to figure out, are they on a first date? Are they on, have they had a couple dates or in the relationship? And it was very interesting to see two people sitting at the dinner table, not at the dinner table in a restaurant, but looking at their phones, you know, and not taking that. I think we do that in intimate relationships. And, you know, Tony brought me my iPad. I'm grateful I didn't have it when we were dating, because that's one thing I actually asked him, do you think I'm addicted to the iPad? And he paused, and I thought, oh, he's pausing. So that, there's my answer right there. And he said, sometimes. So I've made a conscious effort to put it back. Like when he comes in at night, I put it down, charge it, and step away from that. So what's been your observation in relationships, whether your own or observing others, about people who just, in my opinion, need to unplug?
Yeah, I see it as 50-50. So like, I'm out on a patio a lot, out at my local coffee shop, and you see first dates happening all the time, or people who are together and they walk in and they sit down. So it's about one in every two couples are on the phone. Either one or both of them are on the phone. So they're not, they're sitting there, but you know, they're together, but they're not really together. They're both off in their own separate space. And I always find it interesting, because you're right, you can sort of tell, you know, who the first dates, what the first dates are. And I've seen instances where one has been on the phone and the other person has been trying to chat and isn't fully engaged, or trying to be fully engaged. And then it goes south pretty quick, because they realize that person's not giving them their undivided attention, especially on a first date, because you want to make a good impression. You know, you want to be your authentic self, but you also, you want to make a good impression. You know, you want manners, this and that. You want to be generally a nice person. And, you know, that goes a long way towards telling someone, letting them know, you know, the type of person you are. If you're going to be distracted on something as important as a first date, then how are you going to be on the third date or the fourth date or in a marriage?
Absolutely. So what questions can you ask yourself to make yourself a better partner?
I think it's important to ask yourself if you're doing everything you can. Am I doing everything I can be doing, or am I being lax? Am I being lazy in a way? Because sure, people say relationships do take work, but they don't have to. If you're the type of person that is always mindful of your partner and you want to give your best, you want to be your best, then you're going to take checkpoints along the way, and you're going to do that automatically. It's like, it's part of who you are. It's part of what you do. So that's a real key point that you can take away from that.
I always ask my husband, how can I be a better wife? And listen to what he has to say. And I do that on a regular basis. I would say the other thing that was a big aha for me, that was a huge switch that I figured out prior to meeting him, was I expected my partner to fulfill too much. And I was like, I can't expect my partner to make me happy. That has to happen for me. I can expect and desire that he enhances that, but I can't put the complete burden on him to make me happy. What are your thoughts about that?
Right. I think that's more symptomatic of what we've been kind of told in a way from a societal perspective, that this other person is going to make you happy. I need someone to make me happy. But in reality, in the equation, it's about 25 to 35% of, you know, where you derive your happiness from in that relationship. The rest of it is, you know, external. It's, you know, what you're doing in your life, your career, your friends. So there's a number of different ways to be fulfilled or gain fulfillment completely as a person. And if you put too much emphasis on that, then you're kind of, in a way, having that other person take on more of a burden than they actually should. So yeah, that's very problematic today. And I think that there's a balance, you know, and a lot of that comes from, you know, again, going back to knowing yourself and understanding where you might be falling short and what you can do about that. When there's too much, you know, too much reliance on another person, then you can fall into one of those codependent type of situations. And they never seem to be ideal, of course.
I will share a funny story that involved Vince. So when I was dating my husband, Vince was kind of my guy go-to and man. And I'd, you know, text or call him for the guy's perspective. And then I had another friend that was the woo-woo spiritual perspective. So I had, early on in my relationship, with my husband, and I had texted Vince, and I don't remember what I said, and he just wrote back, and he said, "You're being clingy. You're being clingy." And I said, "But no, this time for once, I'm not trying to be clingy. I just really like this guy and want to spend time with him." And I think because I had been texting him a lot, and he's like, "Nah, you're coming off as clingy." And I'll never forget, I texted my husband, and I'm a huge fan of the John Gray books and Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. I think he gives a lot of good advice. And so I texted him and said, "You know, I'm sorry. I don't mean to put any pressure. I just really enjoy spending time with you." And it was the truth. And I could literally, over the phone, we were texting, feel him shift. And after that, like John Gray, if you've read any books, talks about men being like rubber bands in the beginning of a relationship, and they got to have some time apart, and then they come back. And once that happened, we were fine. But I just thought that that was funny to share, because I would say in the past, I was always clingy, but for once I wasn't trying to be, and it was coming off that way. So any thoughts on that?
Right. I vaguely remember that. Well, I'm not sure exactly, you know, what you wrote, but yes, I remember writing back, "You're being clingy." I think that it's important to, of course, maintain a little bit of distance, because, you know, especially initially, because you don't want to be overwhelming. You don't want to jump into or dive into immediate relationship, immediate 24/7 with that person, because you don't even know if you're going to like that person. Essentially, it takes a while to figure out and understand, you know, what another person is all about, especially, you know, their heart from within. It's about being vulnerable. You know, you both have to be vulnerable to a point where the other person can see that, to really understand who they are that's staring back at. And right off the jump, when things like that happen, it just kind of, people start to repel. One, it might be a little too much, so they'll start to back away. When the other person might actually try even harder, will force the other person to back away even more. So it's a tough thing to do, because in the very beginning, it's exciting and you want to learn as much as you can. So in a way, it can sometimes come off as clingy. But the important thing to remember is to just have some patience, just take a step back and breathe and think, okay, if I have things that I want to know, I'm going to learn those in time. Maybe it's a matter of just putting one item out there and saying, "Hey, I have a question about this," or, "Hey, how do you feel about this?" Rather than putting the whole list together and then firing off one question, the next question, the next question. So it kind of gives you time to take a step back, let them process it, let them provide a response, and then you continue forward. So it's like, it's a step, it's a process, one step at a time.
Do you keep saying you'll declutter, get organized, or pursue your dream someday, but someday hasn't come? Learn how Julie Caraccio can support you at reawakenyourbrilliance.com.
I would also say, this just popped in my head. One, first, hopefully I won't end up on Married an Axe Murderer. Those shows always crack me up, because I'm like, I don't believe it. You have had a known at some point. You can't be that clueless. But anyway, I think a mistake people make is that they have this laundry list of items that they're looking for in a partner. And, you know, I tell the story, I wanted things like someone who was intelligent, had integrity, and I had a height thing, which we'll get into a little bit later. But once I removed that from my list, I found my husband. But I've seen people, like, I thought I had, except for the height thing, integrity, having a good personality. They were solid qualities. They weren't like, he's got to make $1 million. And I know people, I met this woman once, I'll never forget this, when I first moved to Raleigh, and she had like 100 things that her guy had to have. And one was like a boat, an airplane. I mean, and she said she met someone. I'm like, yeah, you're probably divorced now. But it was just beyond the pale ridiculousness. And I think that a lot of people, and I say this is both men and women, they just have these ridiculous expectations of what they're looking for in someone that most humans probably couldn't meet. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy to get caught up in all of the things that you want from a material or a lifestyle or whatever perspective, not necessarily thinking about the actual person, the type of person you're looking for, their interpersonal qualities. So it's easy to say, okay, well, I'd like to meet someone who has this type of job, who makes this much money, this type of car, that, etc. But what it really comes down to is the interpersonal qualities that that person brings to the table. So if you focus on those, then that kind of clears many things up. So it's kind of like, it's no longer cloudy in your mind. You know the type of person you're looking for. And then everything else is sort of negotiable. Realistically, if you find that type of person who has the qualities you're looking for, then is having the boat all that significant? Do they really want the boat? Does it really matter anymore? So yeah, I think we've gotten to a point where people have become, they're just, you know, past experiences they've accumulated, and they've accumulated a lot of negative experiences that they say, okay, well, I'm not going to settle anymore. And not settling to me means they have to have this, they have to have that. And they come up with a giant list when essentially that's really not that important in the grand scheme of things.
So if someone's looking, how will they find a successful relationship? And I think whatever your response is will probably be work for someone maybe who's in a relationship now that's not successful and struggling. So what would you say to those people who are in that position now?
The people who are in the relationship and struggling or looking for a relationship?
If they're going to be a different answer, you get to answer two questions.
Oh, okay. All right, sure. Well, if you're single and you are looking, then the best thing to do is just continue to work on yourself, right? So you want to, there's nothing specifically that you can do other than getting out and about and, you know, remaining visible. You know, people are not going to come to you. You can't just, you know, sit there and hope someone knocks on your door and then there that person is. So you have to be out there. You have to be visible, do some social activities, things that you're interested in doing. Just meet people, talk to everybody. From a personal standpoint, it's also important to understand what you're looking for. So that way, when you are meeting people, you can gain an idea of whether or not this person might be right, engage whether or not they're interested. I had a coach a long time ago who told me that he basically said luck is preparation meeting opportunity, right? So if you're doing all the work and you're the best person you can be, you're your best self, you know what you're looking for, then when opportunities come up, you'll be able to recognize those and you'll be able to make a decision whether or not those are good to pursue or not so.
I'd agree with that.
Part of the question, sorry.
No, that's okay. So the second part, so that was for if someone's looking for a relationship. So if someone's maybe in a relationship now, they don't have to be married, but maybe been dating for a while and it's not successful and they're struggling or having challenges, what advice would you have for them?
Well, I would say evaluate it and don't stay in it just because that's comfortable to you. It has to work for you. It has to work for both of you. And if there's a disconnect, if you've gone in separate directions or you have, you know, personalities that just don't mesh, there seems to be contention or it seems like more of a fight, more of a struggle. And that's why people say that relationships take work. They do, but sometimes they take a lot of work. So if they take a lot of work, it's probably not the right relationship. I've been in good and bad relationships. So the ones that have always been the best for me have been, they've had a flow to them. It was very easy because we were very similar people. We had similar lifestyles and it just flowed naturally. We were happy just being, happy being together. And then there have been others where we've been on different pages, personality-wise, not the greatest of match, different lifestyles. So one or both of us kind of felt a lot of, you know, inner turmoil and a lot of, you know, inner pull to say, you know, really explore this. You know, there's something wrong here and I need to sit down and figure out what that is. So I would say don't stay in it just for the sake of staying in it. Just, it has to work for both of you. And you have to, of course, be giving, you know, your best effort as well. There's a point between giving your best effort and knowing that something's untenable. And listen to yourself because your intuition really does know. It knows more than what our logical brains know on an emotional level and on a soul level. So it's important to listen. So if you're hearing yourself say, this isn't right, then you might need to explore that further.
Now, in your book, you talk about honoring your emotions, and correct me, you might have phrased it differently because that's how I would call it, and I did an episode on that because I think it's super important, but I'd like to hear your perspective on what you mean by that and What does that mean to you and in relationships?
To me, it means not putting them aside. So if you're feeling something, then take the time to explore it and really understand it. And also, don't put it away. Don't just package it up and say, okay, well, I'm feeling this way, so I'm just going to stifle this. And you have to at least express that. Know what it is. And then if you're going to be upset about something, then feel upset. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to be angry that all those emotions come out. And then once they do, then figure out what your next steps are, what you can do to kind of move forward, what you can do to help your situation. But it's important to honor those, know what you're feeling, and then be able to feel those emotions. Because when you don't, they just sit there and they just sort of fester in a way, and it comes out in other ways. And then it sort of clouds the primary emotion that was at the core of it. So then you can easily lose sight of that and then go off on a different direction, not fully understanding what's really going on.
So Tony and I had our first big fight in April, and we ended up, I was so angry at him. And as he put it, I lost some of my unicorn shine. I was angry. It's the angriest, one of the angriest things I've ever been in my life. And I knew, but it was really helpful because it taught me a couple things. One, I knew in that moment, as angry as I was at him, I'd have to forgive him and I'd have to move past it. And I'm like, oh, now I understand why people get divorced. Or you think, gosh, they haven't been married that long. And so it doesn't make sense. But I thought, oh, because it starts out as this little, okay, that's this fight. But then it's the emotions aren't honored. They're not shared. It's never fully vetted. And so then something else builds upon that and builds and builds and builds. Whereas if you would have dealt with something at the beginning, then it would have been fine. And the other thing that was really important is I knew in that moment, I can't solve this. I need support. And my husband's not into the woo-woo as much as I am. So I felt the universe had our back. I saw this therapist. I'm like, okay, I liked her 2-minute video on her site. We got an appointment the next day. And what was really helpful, because I said to her, I said, you know, this is our first fight. And she's like, you've been married almost 5 years. Like, you are doing really well. Because, you know, you don't have a measuring stick. You know, for me, never having been married, what is quote unquote normal? And what was very helpful is, because he was a little bit skeptical of the process, and I said, it's either this or the woo-woo stuff. So he went with this. But what was great about her is she had my number. She's like, you like to control things. Okay, perfect. She knows what she's talking about. She's got my number, so we can do this. But saying, okay, you know, we need support in this moment. And then it was fine because I was able to let it go and move forward. But that was honoring, okay, this is how I feel. This is what your action, blah, 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 blah. And then asking for support. So you have any thoughts on that?
Oh yeah, that's definitely important. You need to know what you're feeling and you need to be able to express that. So if there's something that is upsetting, then you need to be able to talk about it. You need to be able to talk about it on an emotional. And if you do need support, then yes, reach out, because many people don't know what to do with these things when they occur. And then they try to take them on themselves, even if it's something they don't understand or something that's kind of been bugging them for a long time. And if they don't deal with that, then it just kind of sits there and then other things build on top of that. And then you have a giant mess on your hands, of course. So that is important. I think today, many people are just afraid of reaching out. They're afraid of asking for help. They're afraid of looking for help. And that just very, very well may be a product of society today, especially, you know, social media. Everybody's out there, you know, all of their posts are happy posts for the most part. Everybody's doing cool stuff. Everybody's taking great pictures. And then they think that, okay, well, why are these people having such a great time? And I'm not. So it kind of feeds on itself as well.
I saw a little clip on someone who's like an Instagram star, and it was exhausting. The amount of time to get the right picture. I'm like, nah, I'll earn my money another way. It was just too much. So I want to know what your thoughts are. Once we figure out what our challenges, our baggage is, how do we go about working to improve them?
There are plenty of help references out there, self-help references, of course, and you might need suggestions. But the important thing is to remain persistent. So don't let it go. Don't just say, okay, well, this is what I need to do, and then put it aside. The goal is to start working on it. And if you have to work on one thing a day, or you need a day where you can work on a bunch of things, but it's important not to lose sight of it. I think that's part of the challenge. Of course, getting the help, at least acknowledging it, understanding, that's the first part. And then the second step is what you're going to do to take action, because, you know, you could feel lost, you could feel helpless, and you could feel like, I have no idea how to start or how to sort this problem. So then, you know, help might be required there, or it's easier to break it down into small pieces. What can I do right now? What do I know? And I know what we'll do to help. Then let me start on that. And that might open the door to understanding better the next piece of it and how to deal with that.
So talk a little bit about your book. I wanted to have Vince on the podcast today. Both my husband and myself read his book and could relate to that, even though we're married and it was written from a single man's perspective. But it was really engaging. And, well, just you talk about the book, and then I'll ask any questions that might come up. But tell us about the book.
Okay. The book is called Confessions of a Middle-Aged Short Guy with No Game. Essentially, it was a book that I had written because I had always had questions about, you know, how I felt about dating and what I would see, the type of reactions that, you know, issues that I had dealt with. So as a short person, there's been a height bias, and there always has been a height bias. And that goes into specific, you know, psychological primal types of brain stuff, limbic brain stuff, when it comes to guys and height and women and how they see guys of a certain height. One night I was sitting around the table with a bunch of my guy friends, and we were talking about, you know, dating. The topics always come up, the dating, relationships, dating sites, etc. And my one friend wanted to get our opinion of a woman that he was chatting with on Bumble. So he passed the phone around to everybody, and we gave him our opinion once we had seen, you know, the text messaging back and forth. But then I asked him to bring up his Bumble queue because I was curious. And when he brought up his queue was full. And I said to him, I said, you get a full queue here. What are you going to do with all these people? He's like, well, I'll just swipe, and then, you know, a bunch of them will go away, and then it'll reload again. And I thought to myself, how is that even possible? Because I've been on Bumble for as long as this guy, probably even longer, and I might only have one or two people at a time who have ever swiped on me. I thought to myself at that point, well, okay, this goes all the way back. I know that, you know, height has always been an issue. It was an issue for me when I was in my teenage years and my early adulthood, and I understood, you know, how that affected me during those years. But then I thought, okay, well, this guy's an average guy. Yeah, he looks a little bit bigger and stockier, and, you know, but he's not really tall, and he's just another average guy. How come his queue is full and mine is always empty? So I started to go on a fact-finding mission, essentially, asking a lot of questions at social events, single events, talking to different people at the events, and conversations always come up with respect to dating. So you might find in a mixed group conversation, one woman might talk about a past experience or has just a comment, or someone brings up dating and someone goes, oh no. And then it just sort of starts the conversation. So I would ask specific questions, and I would listen to the responses. So I put more and more of this information together. I talked to more people, mostly women, single women, married women, social settings, single events. And I came up with information, and I kind of understood in a way how a woman will see things from, at least from an initial attraction, from a physical point of view. And then I realized that the average guys are just kind of nondescript. They're just, you know, out there, here and there, and they're pretty much everywhere. So there's not a whole heck of a lot from a physical perspective that, you know, we can go and say, okay, this is what will attract the woman in a way, because it doesn't necessarily work that way. And of course, they're geared towards height being one, a number of other different characteristics, physical as well as interpersonal characteristics. Yeah, it was really interesting to do research on it and to gain a better understanding of where I actually sat in the pecking order as an average, a short average guy in dating in 2018.
My husband's shorter than Vince, and I think I learned in the book from Vince what the average height of a guy, because I'm like, you're not short. And he's like, yes, I am. But Tony read it, I read it, and he was like, yeah, this is my experience. The other thing that I think women should read this book too, because I was in shock. I know a lot about Vince, and he'd shared some stories, but not all, or they might have been. Women would benefit from reading the book, because don't be like some of the women in this book, because I think we all have a horror story of someone who is completely awful, but these were just some stories that were like, wow. And it broke my heart that I could relate to that, and that my husband could, and that we're not alone in that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it was important to put those in there, because part of the book, the first part of the book that I focus on, I go back through my dating history. So I talk about when I noticed that I was different and the things that I was seeing, like friends, the girls were attracted to them and not me. They were all so much taller than me. So, you know, for me, it was more or less a providing that dating history and providing, you know, how each of those experiences made me feel, right? So, and how that affected me going forward. So definitely, you know, what I saw in my teenage years and understanding, you know, where the attention went, left me in a pretty bad state in my 20s, because I would internalize all of this stuff. So I wasn't like one of those guys who would just ask anybody and just one said no, the next one said no, keep going. I kind of took those personally. I kind of thought to myself, okay, what's wrong with me? How come everybody is saying no to me? So that affected me for many years going forward. So that took me through my entire 20s and into my early 30s. So, you know, it lends itself towards the things, the negative experiences we accumulate when we're young, how they affect us, how they could affect us if you're not, you know, able to work on those issues and process them appropriately and get the help you might need and understand. That was the big key for me, is in understanding. I kind of knew, but I really wanted concrete evidence. It's like, okay, this is how it is. Yes, there is a pecking order, and I know where I sit, and I'm okay with that. Going back, it was like you had said earlier, oh, you're not short. But really, that's not actually the truth. I am short. I am shorter than the average height, which makes me short. So it was just more or less, you know, understanding and then forming conclusions based on my understanding rather than just having the information be floating around out there and not being able to make sense of it. So was I short? Was I not short? Well, I needed to figure out.
Losing money because you aren't organized? Tired of spending hours looking for things? Stressed out? Go to reawakenyourbrilliance.com to learn how Julie Caraccio can support you.
So that's the first part of the book, is your story. And then what's the second part?
It's broken up into three parts. The second part are the observations that I've made and the information that I was able to piece together by attending these events and listening to conversations, having one-on-one conversations with people. So those are all my observations. And I provide more or less the qualities that women find to be the high value qualities in men. And I list those out and I provide some details and I provide examples of, you know, how this plays out in a social setting, especially at singles events. So that was really interesting to see, you know, to understand, okay, this is a quality that women are, you know, find attractive. And then to see a guy with one of those qualities and another guy with those qualities, and they're both talking to the woman in a group conversation, and you could see who she's gravitating. It was very interesting. The third part of the book was more or less dating, present day dating dynamics, where I bring social media into it. How we as a society are also affected, how we've changed as a society, and how dating has become, in a way, less of a priority. People don't take it as seriously, that type of thing. Even though they might be out there looking, they really don't take it seriously. So they don't put effort into it, in a way. So I talk a lot about the dating dynamics of 2018 in the third part of And then I end with some conclusions and words of advice.
All right, Vince. So one of the things that I have all the guests do and that I do every podcast, I want you to leave us with three take action items that people can do moving forward, or you can do more than three, but at least three. All right, what do you got for us?
Okay, the first thing is to be authentic. Be who you are, especially if you are single, because people want to see the real you. So if you kind of mask that or cover up the real you, sure, we could put our best foot forward. Everyone needs to put their best foot forward, of course, but if you're covering who you are in the process, then it eventually will come out anyway, because we always get to an understanding of who that person is that we're interacting with. Might take a few weeks, it might take a few months, but we always figure that out, and that's everyone. So that would be the first thing, be authentic. Next thing is just to remain positive, especially if you are single, because it's a jungle out there and we have a lot of negative experiences. Even though, you know, we may have had some positive, those of us who are single probably have some negative as well. So it's really easy to become kind of jaded about it. But if you're out there, you're trying to meet people, then it's important to, in a way, put your best foot forward, but just remain positive, maintain a positive disposition. That's key, because if you're out there and you're in an event you don't want to be at, or, you know, something, you know, someone had messaged you and now they're not messaging you anymore, and you go out there, you have that on your mind, it's going to take away from your experience. So, you know, it's important. And the other thing is also to live in the moment, be present, understand that not everything has to have an end result. So you can't say, or you shouldn't say, okay, I'm going to this event to find a date. I'm going to meet somebody here and I'm going to get a phone number or get an email and I'm going to schedule it. And if you do that, then you're not really there, you know, being your authentic self. You're not enjoying it for what it is. And you're also kind of like looking, you might wind up missing pieces of conversations or just missing being in that environment because you had an agenda and you had focused on that. And, you know, sometimes it does work, but more often than not, it leaves you kind of feeling bad that, you know, nothing materialized. And that's happened to me. I've done that myself a couple times. So I always try to catch myself when I'm doing that. Or if I know I'm in a place where I don't want to be, or my heart really isn't into it, then I'll just make sure I make my exit fairly quickly rather than prolonging the pain, so to speak.
So your take actions are to be authentic, be positive, and be present. Now, Vince, tell us how people can purchase the book or find out more information about you.
All the information is on my website. It's www.vincegaglione.com. I have a Twitter page. I have a Twitter handle, Facebook. My Twitter is @VinceGaglione. Facebook, I have a number of different pages. One, my personal page, but the book also has a companion page called The Average Joe Dating Confessional. So if you go and type in Average Joe Dating Confessional, it'll pop up just like the page. All the information is out there. I'm also on Goodreads, Google+. And Instagram as well.
We will put Vince Gaglione, he's a nice Italian boy, so we will spell it out for you and put that in the show notes as well as the YouTube link, and his book is available, purchase on Amazon. Well, thanks for coming out today, Vince.
Certainly. I appreciate the opportunity. It was great.
On our next episode, we're talking about kids' paperwork and art. Go out, clear the clutter to create the life you choose, deserve, and desire.
Ready to live a more joyful and fulfilling life? Sign up for our newsletter at reawakenyourbrilliance.com and receive a free copy of 10 Steps to Clearing Clutter Inside and Out. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review Clearing the Clutter Inside and Out. See you next Tuesday at 1 p.m.